Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. My name is Matt Powell. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Joe Staub. How's it going, buddy?
Not bad, man. How are you tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm excited to get into this episode with Tim Sheet, one of my favorite guys. He was a PhD student at the University of Connecticut a few years before you and I went through there. And then he went on to do, you know, the college education scene at Southern Miss and then on to College of Charleston, where he and I connected even further when I was a strength coach there. And then he went on to work for a buddy of his who went through the University of Connecticut, some guy named Jim Stepani. I think some of the nutrition people might have heard of him. You ever heard of him?
Do nutrition stuff?
I think he does. I think he's had a supplement or two. He's probably some small name guy. Yeah. So anyways, Tim is actually his research scientist and the developer and the researcher for all of the science behind every product that goes through the Gym Labs series. So I'm super excited for this conversation. And I really think he did a great job of breaking down a lot of the myths and misconceptions of the supplement industry.
No, he did awesome. And again, he's kind of one of the first of many UConn guys. He wasn't someone who I knew offhand beforehand. Again, he was a little older than me. He was kind of in that gap of he was closing out while you were starting and then I hadn't really started yet. But again, it was great to connect to another UConn guy and a really interesting conversation, especially for anyone who's in this like nutrition side of the business and also kind of the nutrition sales side of the business, because he is that background guy that helps set, you know, Jim Stepani's brand beyond, you know, what Jim stands for, you know, and all the positive research and the value of the products. You know, Tim is the guy who's actually helping do some of that research and putting those things together, you know, literally behind the scenes. So, you know, it was just an awesome thing to see the roles and the different types of things you can do in that business. You know, everyone wants to be the face of the product, but not everyone recognizes that even the face of the product has people behind the scenes. And Tim is one of those guys behind the scenes who really is a difference maker.
Absolutely. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for a lot of people out there listening who do want to kind of do their own thing, but they really hate being in front of the spotlight and being in front of the camera. That's something I've always sucked at, right? Getting in front of a room of 100 football players or 100 tactical athletes or 100 whoever, no problem if they're athletes. Want to get me up in front of somebody for Instagram or social media? Nah, I'm good. Thanks. I'll pass. Not a big fan. So it's kind of finding that balance and figuring out what you want to do. But I'm super excited for this episode. Without any further ado, here's episode number 4 with Tim Sheet from Jim Stepani Labs. On tonight's show, we got Dr. Tim Sheet, currently the Chief Science Officer for Jim Supplement Science and Jim Stepani Media. Jim Supplement Science is the most award-winning sports supplement brand in the industry and includes the number one pre-workout, pre-gym, post-gym, pro-gym, Gym BCAA, as well as a line of capsule products. Gym products retail at GNC, bodybuilding.com, amazon.com, vitaminshop.com, and gymsubs.com. So Dr. Tim Sheet earned his PhD from the University of Connecticut, working under Dr. Lawrence Armstrong and Dr. Carl Marish. He also did his postdoc research at Ball State University, working under some guy named Dr. William Kramer and some other guy named Dr. Jeff Bolick. Joe, do you know those guys?
So I think I do, but I'm not 100% sure. I mean, the names kind of ring a bell. I think I read a few books by them at some point, but I don't know.
That's fair. That's fair. So it is great to have 3 UConn guys on here and then also 3 Kramer guys after him going to Ball State and working with them. So, Tim, we are super excited to have you on. One of the biggest reasons that I asked you to be on here is that your ability – 2 reasons, actually – your ability to go from PhD to non-teaching and not specific research, and then your ability to go from, you know, working with normal academia into supplement company, and your ability to show up what supplement companies actually do and go from a starting to an ending product is extremely valuable to us, and we're excited to hear all about it. So thank you for being here.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me.
Anytime. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now with Jim Stepani and with the Jim Supplement Company?
Well, so to help understand with what we got going on, we really have 2 parts to our company. So we have the supplement side of the company where we work with Jim to develop formulas for products and then, you know, new flavors for products. And then we have a media side of the company where we support Jim and his production of content, which is typically video, but we also do a lot of content on his website, which is, you know, mostly articles. So between the videos and the articles and then photo shoots. So I basically help Jim coordinate all the video and photo shoot stuff, and then help him, you know, shooting the stuff. And if it's anything science related, quite often I pull a lot of the resources that he wants, and then work with him as necessary with whatever he needs to kind of come up with the messaging that he's looking for to put out there. And then if we're going to be putting out some kind of graphics or assets, as the industry likes to call them, I'll put together a lot of the assets for them, because if we just show research graphs from a research paper, the audience just really doesn't understand what a research graph, and they're hard to understand and look at a lot anyways. So I'll remake the graph and make it look something a little bit more easily, you know, easier to understand, you know, for the general consumer. So basically a lot, I do all the behind the scenes kind of a stuff, similar to what I was doing as a professor, but instead of, you know, speaking to 30 students, you know, we'd speak to anywhere, it's probably 500, 700 people live. And then within 24 hours, we're hitting probably 15, 25,000 views.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, if you're talking about educating people, which is what I got into the business for, you know, I can't educate 25,000 students in my career. But in one video, you can educate 25,000 people, and that's in the first 24 hours that it's up. And they're on Facebook and YouTube forever. Yep. So as far as an education standpoint, it's just a new way. So I think it's just work, you know, let the internet do what it does.
No, I love that. And that plays perfectly into my next question, which is going to be, you know, what is your why? What is your reason for why you were working with, you know, Jim Supplement Company and Jim Media and kind of going through everything? You kind of partially answered it, but can you expand on that and just kind of talk more about your reason for doing it?
Yeah, the real reason is Jim gave me a phone call one day and asked me to move to California.
Nice.
Now, he made that phone call, or he told me to move to California several times. And we had the discussion several times that I can't afford to live in California as a professor. As you know, I knew two UConn guys that were both teaching at Fullerton and were living in apartments with roommates. Mm-hmm. And I was not interested in being a professor, having a roommate in an apartment. So sorry, California, your cost of living is just unreasonable. But the day that Jim called me up and said, you know, asked me if I'm ready to move to California. And I was just like, you know, we've had this discussion several times. He's like, well, no, I'm serious. You know, the company is growing to the point where he's like, I need assistance. I need help. I can't do this, you know, by myself anymore. So that's when he made the offer. And it's something that not a lot of people know, but back when we were students at Connecticut, we were running a research study. I think it was 97. And sometimes things happen when they plan research studies. But for some reason, the professors didn't realize that when you're going to train subjects for 8 weeks on a rolling entry date, that you're going to have to train them for basically an entire semester, which means over spring break, which means someone's going to have to stay on spring break and train subjects. Well, that got to be Jim and I and another student. So we're hanging out on spring break training subjects. And one of the master students comes in the lab and say, hey, guys, you want to come over to my parents' house tonight and, you know, hang out in the hot tub? And we're like, no. And he's like, oh, no, my parents aren't going to be home and they have a full bar in the basement. We're like, OK, we'll do that. So literally we're hanging out in the hot tub and he and I start just fantasizing about if we could run our own supplement company, this is the way we would do it. We would only do it this way. We would only make these kind of products. We would, you know, do it, you know, they would be the best possible. They would, you know, it was all pie in the sky, complete fantasy. And then fast forward a number of years and he gets the opportunity to do exactly that. So it was a hard thing to pass up when it was kind of a joke at one time that we would keep, you know, an inside joke that we'd keep talking about that actually kind of came to fruition. So, and that's the same philosophy he runs his company with. You know, he's literally making the products that he wants to use himself. And that's it.
That's awesome. That the fact that you guys went from, you know, being undergraduate and graduate students together and then going to that, that's amazing. So on that same note, when you guys go in and you decide, hey, look, this is what we're going to run, right? So you guys have your orals, you guys have the, you know, the protein, the pre, the post, everything like that. How does the supplement go from being thought of all the way through into actual production of the supplement? Like, what are the actual steps there?
Well, it kind of depends. I mean, it would kind of depend on what kind of supplement. Sometimes, like right now, one of our, I mean, it's been announced, so I can talk about it. So we're coming out with plant protein. And so it's been an idea that we've had for a while. And at first, we weren't really thinking about getting into the plant protein side of things, because we didn't think it really fit our brand and our core customers, until we started realizing that some of our core customers and some of our people that would like to use our brand can't use animal proteins. So, for example, at the time, the executive vice president of GNC could not use an animal, a whey product, because he had an allergy to whey. Therefore, every whey product was just off limits to him, and he was a bodybuilder. So here's a guy that actually wanted to use our product, believed in our product, firmly believed in it, had no problem pushing it and advancing it, but he personally couldn't use it. So he had to use plant proteins. So all of a sudden, we'd start dawning on us, like, you know, there are people out there that are even hardcore bodybuilders that for one reason or another cannot use animal proteins. So that started us thinking, well, okay, if we do a plant protein, then let's fix the problems with plant proteins. And so if people don't really understand a lot about plant proteins, there's very few plant proteins that are, number one, a complete protein. So now that's kind of been fixed. They've identified a lot, and most common is pea protein. First off, pea protein is not spring peas. There are packages out there. If you go into a store, you will see a package or a picture of a spring green pea on the package. That is not what pea protein is.
Okay? Good marketing, though. It's good marketing.
It's lying to you. What pea protein is if you ever had split pea soup, that's what pea protein is, except it usually comes from a yellow pea. It's a legume. So if you've ever been to a restaurant that serves yellow legumes, there's your source of pea protein. Okay? Your yellow field peas or yellow field beans, technically it's a bean. And that's what's used for pea protein. Okay? But most consumers think it's literally a green spring pea. And it's not. But this yellow field pea is a complete protein. The problem, though, is the amino acid makeup of those field peas isn't very good quality for building muscle, because the aminos you need for building muscle are very, very low in plant proteins. And this goes for every plant protein. So typically, the only way you can get enough leucine or enough other aminos that you need for building muscle is to take 1.5 to 2 times the normal dose of a plant protein to get enough of the key aminos in. So we said, okay, well, let's just fix this problem, is we'll design a plant protein using a blend to look at the amino acid ratio, and let's just design it from the amino acid ratio first. Now, anybody else could do this, but no other company in our industry takes a scientific approach. Everyone else takes a marketing approach, which is, we want to sell a product for this amount. How much can we make it for to make the most profit? Jim's approach is, I'm going to make a product that is scientifically sound, and then we'll figure out how we can have it made so that we can make a profit. Unfortunately, our profit's going to be lower because we have to put more ingredients in, or we have to do specialty things because it needs the science aspect. So for RP protein, we had the formula ready, but it took 2 years for this company to build a plant to process the pea protein. So we literally waited for 2 years for them to get this plant built and then go through the testing process and get everything up and running to start producing product. So we've been ready for them and waiting for the science side of things. And this is on the actual production of taking a field pea from a round little pea, crushing it and producing a powdered protein. And it literally, they built the plant in 2 years, but then it took them another 9 months to get the whole operation set And then they had to wait for a fall harvest to get product to actually start making pea protein. Because it doesn't matter if your machinery is ready, if the farmers aren't delivering product, you can't make anything. And that's just based on seasonals. So a lot of things go into this kind of a thing.
Yeah. Tim, that's way deeper than anything I would expect you to say. Because, you know, obviously you think about the simple products like the whey, where you can just cut it off the top as you're going through the entire process of making milk, et cetera. Or you can go to casein, or you can go to other easy animal products that are so rampant in today's, you know, market for supplements, which makes a lot of sense. That was an amazing story, and I definitely had no idea. So that being said, and I think you answered a lot of the questions there, but when somebody wants to start their own company and they want to start their own brand, or they want to create a product, what are the normal steps? Like, how does somebody go to, you know, your level and start to make a protein, or start to make a creatine, or start to make any other sort of supplement?
Basically, what you do is you have to have one of two things. Either you have to have the money to own your own production facility where you would produce it yourself, which that would include you then buying all the raw ingredients. You would source them and purchase all the raw ingredients yourself. And it's, or, and once you've source and purchase your own raw ingredients, you would bring them into your own facility and do all the, you know, production. And then you have to then deal with storage and sales. And that's basically is vertical integration. Very, very few companies are able to do that. There's a few, but very few. The normal way is you go through a third party. So there's companies that do production, and that's all they do is production. And they'll do production for multiple brands. So we use a third party. They're called co-packers, is the term that's used. And so when we go in and we visit our, you know, one of the things that Jim decided is he's going to have a personal relationship with every person we do business with, every company we do business with. So my first year with Jim, we took 40 trips in the first year to go out and meet every single company that we're going to do business with. Hand to hand or face to face. Toured their facilities, met everybody. And, you know, if there wasn't a good feeling, we're not going to do business with them, because everyone's out there to sell, and they want to sell and make promises. So then you have to determine, are they going to follow through on the promises that they are giving you? And sometimes the fact that Jim's a very intelligent man, he also's got a lot of street smarts. So that aspect of the street smarts is really beneficial in business. Because there's not a lot of really honest people in business. In fact, what I consider honest, where, you know, a handshake is all you need, you don't need a contract, that it doesn't exist a lot. Mm-mm. So to find those kind of people is very challenging. And you can find them, you just have to do your due diligence. So when we've met these people and toured the facilities, they can't tell us that they produce for another company. It's in the contract. However, when you walk around the floor of the plant, you look at boxes, you look at labels, pretty easy, pretty clear who they also produce for. Now you have to realize when they're producing for you, your stuff is going to be laying out there in the open too. It's just the way it is. Now you go to their headquarters area and there's a display case with a display of all the different bottles of products that they produce. Well, you might as well stop by and take a quick photo. And then we get back to the hotel and start searching that photo to see really what they all produce and who they're producing for. Because there's little secrets you learn along the way. If you need stuff produced very quickly, there's a way to get bumped up the line and production line called money. And people will pay. You get their production bumped ahead of yours. And if they pay enough, they will be, which puts your production slower. So sometimes you can handle that. Sometimes that makes you very upset. And they don't tell you that's why you're getting delayed or why things are happening. So to have a good relationship with your co-packer is important, because you need to be able to be aware of these things, because sometimes a delay can mean you're out of product on your shelf. You're out of product, you cannot make money. And then your customers complain. So one of the things that we also deal with is that we are live on social media. And we're the only company that's live on social media, meaning that we have a very big fan base that Jim is responsible to. If they're not happy, we hear about it. And we hear about it today. And one disgruntled customer can turn one Facebook message into a huge problem just because they're disgruntled and it starts spinning and spinning because that's social media. Well, Jim started off on social media, so his promise was that he will answer questions and be available, and he doesn't go back on his promise. So that's where we live. Well, no other company lives on social media. So if their customers have a problem, they can complain on social media all day long. Their owner doesn't get the brunt of it. Jim does. So we have to nip problems quickly or avoid problems quickly, or he's going to be taking the brunt of it. So, you know, the way that we kind of look at things, we just want to run things the way and be treated the way, or treat others the way we want to be treated. So if I place an order at Amazon, I want to be treating others the same way I want my order to be processed and delivered. And that's it. It's just that simple. Now, we know problems are going to happen, but we'll deal with it. If there's a problem, tell us. And we'll solve it. That's it. You know, we have the policy with, you know, like GNC, if you have a bad container, you know, something's wrong with the container, if you don't like the flavor, return it. They'll give you a new one. No questions asked. You don't have to make up a story. You didn't like it. Just exchange it. No problem. We would want you to be happy with the product. Why would you stick you with something you don't like? You aren't going to come back and buy a new one then. Come get one that you like. So now I think we're going to start doing samples, or not sample packs, but individual serving packs. So hopefully in the future, people can buy some variety of flavors to try different things in the future before I have to, you know, commit to a 20 serving tub or a, you know, 30 serving container. And then that's all you have until it's gone. But sometimes it's risky to try a new flavor, especially if that's all the money you have.
So Tim, you bring up a good point. My former experience in the CPG space, doing sport nutrition, that was one of my recommendations, was the way the market is and committing dollars and, you know, getting someone to buy the $60 tub of whatever your product is, you know, having the 3 or 4 flavor individual serving sample pack for $9.99, whatever it is, gets skin in the game. It gets taste. It gets trial. And the most important thing is it gets skin in the game on the customer side, putting dollars in. Because if they're willing to spend a few dollars to try and they like it, you know, you can get their dollar. So I love the idea. And it's actually been from a business development and, you know, customer centric approach, which is what you've described, being customer centric, the way you do social media. I love that idea. And I've referenced that to a bunch of CPGs that I've consulted with and worked with.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, individual packs are expensive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very expensive. But the way I explain it is, you know, I'm a Diet Mountain Dew drinker. So if I go into the gas station to buy a single Diet Mountain Dew, it's going to cost me $2 to $2.50. I can buy a 6-pack at Target for $2 or $2.50 on sale. I'm willing to spend the $2.50 for a single because I want it right this second. Mm-hmm. I don't have time to go to Target and buy a 6-pack and chill it. So you're paying for convenience.
Yep.
So a single serving pack is convenience. But they also work well. For example, my nephew, who is a swimmer, it works so much better to have a single serving pack to throw in his bag than to try to put anything else in his bag, even a Ziploc baggie. Mm-hmm. Just pouring protein out of a Ziploc baggie into a water bottle just does not work well, especially for a 17-year-old kid. Yep. But a single serving pack, they're a little more rigid. They work better. If someone says, oh, you can use these little transfer, you know, little things, good luck getting one to come back home.
Or stay clean.
This is reality.
Stay clean. You're using, I know exactly what you're talking about. The little scooper funnels and everything. Oh, one time we did a marketing campaign where we bought them, logoed them, and sent them out with shaker bottles as a thing. And then you get the shaker bottles with the bottom piece to throw stuff in. Actually, a friend of mine, a guy, he's a Harvard decathlete who I competed against. I did track and field at UConn. He owns Jacked Pack. It's the monthly subscription to the supplement trials. So it's one of those subscription boxes, and it's all around buying samples. And years ago when he started it, It was exactly that. It was getting samples from companies, getting things in people's hands, and then he evolved it into actually being an online store where people could buy the full-size product after they tried the sample. And I believe, don't quote me on this, I think he ended up selling it off and even actually selling it to GNC or Vitamin Shop or somebody. But, you know, one of the things when he was originally starting, I used to talk to him about it, he was like, look, he's like, these individual samples cost more money per unit than, you know, buying a $60 tub. He's like, so what we're paying and the way we're doing it, he had to do some, again, Harvard educated kid, do some funny things with buying versus selling versus residual costs versus percentages of cost, like to get the math to work, because an individual sample pack was, you know, sometimes it's 5x per serving versus buying a serving out of a tub.
Oh yeah. They're ridiculously expensive. Packaging kills you.
Oh yeah. Especially if you want a good packaging and not just a little junky ripaway thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And even, you know, we would like to go to bags again, you know, like a Ziploc bag or whatever, closure bag, so you can roll it down to keep, you know, the air out. Mm-hmm. But to find one that's really good quality that closes back up again and is going to stay sealed and closed is really difficult to find. Mm-hmm. You know, and we keep, you know, I have a dog, so, you know, looking at all the different dog treat bags, none of them re-zip. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to have a protein powder in a bag that doesn't re-zip. Because you can't keep the air out, you can't keep it from oxidizing, you can't keep the moisture out. Mm-hmm. So it's about, you know, keeping your product as good quality as possible. And I'm sure you're not going to put a pre-workout in a non-airlock bag. You know, it'll be clumped within a week because they're so sensitive to humidity.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, you got to keep your product, you know, quality.
Kind of going into the weeds for a sec, personal experience, I actually bought a case of RTDs. Because same thing, I, you know, COVID, garage, gym, trying to get it in. I got two kids. I'm up crazy hours. I need a little kick. And same thing. I had a tub of some stuff. Week later, it's clumped. Waste of money, right? So I said, you know what? Hell, I'm going to the RTD route. So what are your thoughts on that? And again, I know we're going into the weeds outside of the business, but with the business of nutrition being so many different product types, how do you guys manage the product type versus, you know, having a core around the science and the quality of the product?
So that's where marketing comes in. So that's one of the things that we have on our board. And, you know, we're always looking at, you know, developing new products. So, you know, we've had a joint supplement product on the, you know, on the board for a while now. The formula is ready to go. But we keep moving it down because a few other things are a little more important consumer-wise. Mm-hmm. So we've got an RTD that got bumped ahead of the joint product because the market demands it. The market will like an RTD better than a joint product. So from a sales standpoint, which one would you know is going to be more important for us from a sales standpoint, putting out an RTD or putting out a joint product? They're both going to be good quality products. I can tell you which one's going to sell better. Because I know what people are going to want, you know, more of. Now, our joint's going to be very expensive, and we're going to have to do a lot of educating about it because of the ingredients we're going to put in. So it's easy to push it down a little bit, mm-hmm. just because it's just not that big of a huge demand out there for people. Whereas an RTD, which most of them are going to be energy type drinks, when we're going to do an RTD, it'll be a gym RTD, which will be, it'll have a reason, it'll have a focused purpose, and it'll be scientifically driven. And the science part of it for Jim is every ingredient has to have published research behind it, showing its effectiveness. And it has to work in the gym. Because there's a bunch of research out there for products that just don't work in the gym. So they have to work both. So our standard when anyone pitches us a new product, which is, you know, all of the companies that sell us ingredients, they come to us all the time. And they always send you the marketing information or will you attend this? And my answer is always flat no. Send me the research. That's all I care about is the raw research papers. If they pass the standard, the next question is send us your raw ingredient. Enough for that we can try it. If they aren't willing to send us raw ingredient, we're done. Because we're not going to formulate with it until we try it ourselves. If Jim doesn't feel anything beneficial from it, we're done. It just, it has to pass certain standard tests of his, or it's just not going to happen. And this isn't anything new for him. This is what he did when he was at Muscle and Fitness. When he did supplement reviews, people would, he'd send me the, you know, what you got, send me the product. He would try it. And if it worked, if he felt it was beneficial, he would review it and put it in Muscle and Fitness magazine. If it didn't, he just didn't write about it. Because he can't write a negative review in Muscle and Fitness because it could be a potential advertiser. So if it worked, great. If it didn't, you just don't write about it. You just don't talk about it. Fair. So eventually, if Jim gave a product a thumbs up, it really took off. So beta-alanine with Carnosine's beta-alanine and Concrete's creatine hydrochloride both really took off after Jim gave him his thumbs up. And it's just products. I mean, we all know that beta-alanine works and we know that creatine works. There are no surprises there.
But it's funny you mentioned the dynamic of managing the perception, the marketing, and then the revenue cost payer payee dynamic. A friend of mine now, but I knew him from, he was an intern and a student for me when he was getting his master's when I was at Hofstra, Jake Bolley. He was at Barbend for a while. And before that, he was a supplement reviewer. I believe it was Vitamin Shop. And he was doing stuff in the same vein. He would say, you know, look, like people send me stuff all the time, but what I put out has to be positive because the relationship dynamics, if we get stuff that just isn't it, we don't blast anybody because you never know if their next thing is it. And then now I'm out the revenue, the advertising, everything else. So again, it's a curious dynamic with the, not only are you the reviewer, but you're also the sponsor slash seller slash everything in the industry.
Yeah. We all know, I mean, there's no magic pills. There's no magic ingredient. Because we hear this all the time. Like, well, what's the next hottest thing? There is no next hottest thing. It just doesn't exist. There is no supplement out there that's going to take you from average to great. Nothing is going to do that for you.
It's so, not on Amazon?
You know?
It's not next day delivery on Amazon? I can't
believe that doesn't happen. You know, I mean, it's just funny. I hear this all the time and I was like, people, there's no, you know, even creatine's not magical. You know, it'll help you. It'll give you a boost. But it's not going to turn you into something super extra. So put your training in, you know, and like Jim's mantra is, before you talk about supplements, what's your diet like? You know, let's get your training and diet right first. Then we can talk supplements.
Couldn't agree more. And one of the things you already kind of hit on was how much money gets put in and out, right? So you now have your product, right? Your, you know, plant-based protein. And then you went and you found the correct distributor. You found, you know, you kind of sourced it, figured all that out. So then I guess I want to go into the next step, which would be, you know, you already did the marketing. So what are the economics of the supplements? Like, how do you figure out pricing? And then one thing you and I talked about before this even started was, how can a supplement company offer BOGO, you know, buy one, get one, and not lose money? So just kind of walk me through that.
The pricing part I'm not as familiar with because I don't deal with any of that. You know, I'm strolling on the business side or the science aspect of things in our company. So we've got a whole team that deals with the whole business marketing, setting, you know, the price points and all that kind of a thing. So if you're interested, I could actually hook you up with a guy that actually does that kind of stuff and has worked in the industry for, you know, 20 years. His name is Vince Andrich. And he's the guy that, yeah, that'd be easy, you know, because Vince, you know, he'll take a product where he'll tell us, you know, if we want to, let's say a fat burner is selling at GNC for, you know, $30 to $45. So we got to be within that range for our retail price. And if our ingredient cost is X, well, then, you know, the rest you think is margin. Well, no, it's not. You got to pay for your warehouse. You got to pay for your shipping. You got to pay for this. You got to, GNC is going to take their cut. You got to pay for, you know, this. You got to pay for this. And all of a sudden what's left over, you're like, oh, you know, and then you got to take in, if you're going to have a discount, you have to pay for that. You know, when it's 25% off, somebody has to cover that 25%. It's not just magical that that 25% disappears. So one of the things that we're talking about is if a company does offer a BOGO, buy one, get one free, or buy one, get one half off, The only way they can afford to do that is their margin is so big, they can absorb that, which tells me that their ingredient cost is so low. So first off, I look to see what's their ingredient list. And if it's proprietary blend, you know it's the biggest red flag out there. Because as soon as it's a proprietary blend, you have no idea what they put in there, amount-wise. They could put in 1 microgram, and it's legal by the FDA. Because they listed it on the label, and it's under the proprietary blend. So that's the easiest way for them to cheat the customer, is proprietary blends. If they are listing their, all their ingredients and the amounts, then you start wondering about the quality. Because for them to have that price point, they can only be spending so much money. So then what's the quality of the ingredients that they actually are putting in there? And where are they coming from? So now, one of the things that we're talking, you know, when we produce, every ingredient that comes into the production facility goes into quarantine. In the production facility we use, the quarantine is actually a cage. Literally, it's a monstrous cage under lock and key. Everything gets entered into it, and it doesn't leave there until it's got its testing come back, you know, with all the antimicrobials, X, Y, and Z. Once those tests come back, they can leave quarantine and go onto the production floor. Our products, once they're produced, go into quarantine, and they have to pass testing, final testing, for antimicrobials, X, Y, and Z. Even if we request them to send us a product off the line so that Jim can have it so we can do some social media photo shoots, it'll come with a label on the bottom, do not use, not for human consumption, and a letter will come with it. That's a legal letter stating you cannot use this product without, you know, final testing, being sent. Mm-hmm. And if we do use it ahead of time, it's our own risk, our own liability. We cannot sue them X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Because it hasn't been tested yet, or, you know, the results haven't come back yet. And could it be contaminated? Sure, it could be. It's a production line. Mm-hmm. You know, production lines are open. Some of it's open air. You know, it's a funnel system when it's falling. I mean, it's the rarity of being contaminated is very rare, but it can happen. It's real life. Believe it or not, I've seen production lines where the scoops are added by hand. The lids are put on by hand, or the wrappers around the lids are put on by hand. Stuff can happen. So that's why tests, you know, testing has gone through. And it's why you do these kinds of things. Forgot the rest of the question.
I was just asking about how you see that playing out as far as some companies being able to afford the BOGOs, which you...
Yeah, it all comes down to your ingredient sourcing, you know, because honestly, you can save money on your ingredients by in bulk. You know, that's one of the things that Jim's, you know, his formula for pre-gym was in muscle and fitness years before he ever made pre-gym. He taught people, buy these ingredients individually. Here's how much you use of each one of them. Make your own pre-workout. Here's how you do it. Now, it tasted like crap because there's no flavoring. Horrible. Now, how can we make it cheaper than you can personally? Because if you go out and buy a bottle of creatine hydrochloride, I go buy 4,000 kilos of creatine hydrochloride. It's cheaper to buy 4,000 kilos than it is to buy a single bottle.
I call it the Walmart effect. At some point, volume and scale trumps cost. And if you it goes back to your point. If you have the money and you can get the line time and you can get the volumes and the discounts, cash is king.
However, can you use that 4,000 kilos before it expires? Because if you don't, you have to dump it. Mm-hmm. And now that's lost cost. So you can't just go buy as much as, the salesman will like, well, yeah, okay, 4,000 is this much. Why don't you buy 6 at this and save yourself this much money? Well, there's no guarantee we could use 6,000 kilos maybe. So you have to project out how much are you going to sell so that you don't buy too much and have to dump it. Because we've had that problem before. You know, like we were wanting to develop a protein flavor. And I wanted to have pretzel pieces, like crushed up pretzel pieces in the protein flavor. We couldn't source a pretzel, crushed up pretzel piece that was under 25,000 pounds. We couldn't use 25,000 pounds of pretzel pieces in 1 year. we figured out we could maybe use 10 to 12,000. Well, that means we'd have to dump the rest. That protein flavor didn't get made because we couldn't afford to dump that much extra waste. It just wasn't economically feasible until we could get our volume big enough where we knew we could make that much to afford that kind of a specialty ingredient. It's just part of the industry. Not enough people are buying pretzel pieces. Now, if you want to talk about chocolate additions, little nib chocolate additions, they'll send you 4 pages worth of options, from micro screen size up to big chunks, gluten-free, soy-free, you know, all kinds of options. It's literally 4 pages of single space typed lines. And then if you ask for samples, they'll send you a little baggie of every one of them. So it's fun. You know, sometimes you can get some interesting stuff to play with. And sometimes you're looking at it going, what the hell? Okay.
So do you find there's one or two big players in the game that you use for your packing and packaging?
Well, you try and use as few as possible, because again, that goes to your better pricing. So most of our powders are all done at one place. The only thing, they are an allergen-free facility, so they can't do any nuts. So our two peanut protein flavors have to be done at a separate facility. And so that's just simply logistics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they refuse. They will not do peanuts or any nuts.
Yeah, but it goes back to your quality comment in terms of if you're trying to maintain a certain standard, those are what happens in the CPG space. And again, for I have a comment to you. Me and Matt were actually talking about it. Someone who he knows over COVID made a supplement company because it seems like it's the thing to do now. Every guru, influencer, I don't know who they influence, but influencer, everybody seems to be on the, I'm going to have a supplement today. And that's one of those things, having spent some time in the CPG space, people don't realize your co-packer, their standards, what are your standards relative to them, certifications, GMP, NSF, you know, blah, 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 blah. Kind of get into some of that. What's, for people listening to this podcast from the business standpoint, they're going to be listening to you probably of all the people we talk to, because you're in that space, right? You're in the nutrition/supplement space. So I have some questions for you in terms of the skills you've taken on coming from, you know, an academic researcher to now being a business guy. You talked about building collateral and messaging and, you know, adjusting graphics packages to fit the lay person. That's a whole skill set you've probably had to manage. And then this other side of, well, what's the advice or what's the stay away from this industry? Because if you don't know what you're getting into, you're just going to piss away a lot of money.
Well, here's the thing is, if you have the finances to do it yourself, that's the way to do it. If anyone's going to get into the industry thinking, I'm going to get my PhD and go to work for a nutrition supplement company, that's not going to happen. There's no nutritional company or supplement companies looking to hire scientists. They just don't. Their scientists are not respected in our industry at all because science gets in the way. I've heard this so many times that science gets in the way. All they want, what our industry is driven by marketing. And that's one of the problems, and one of Jim's goals is to clean up the industry. You know, get rid of proprietary blends. You know, get rid of the BS stuff. And so if we could just have a few companies out there doing it the right way, putting out quality products, and everyone competes equally, that's great. But when you've got the guys that are putting, you know, sprinkling dust worth of ingredients in their products and then selling it as if it's a full dose product and just lying about it, knowing that they can accept the lawsuits and pay them off because they can make enough money that it'll still make a profit. Those are the guys that we cause a problem. And there's so many of them. And there's so many companies out there. I mean, I just saw Department of Justice just settled a lawsuit, not even settled it, sentenced. Two supplement owners, former supplement owners, the Jack 3D guys. I don't know if you saw that. So, I mean, how long ago was this whole thing started? I mean, it was years ago.
2011, because I remember being at Kansas working with Hootie and our nutritionist coming in and being like, oh, they just banned this and they did this. And make sure you tell your kids if they're buying it on the side, that's a problem and everything. That was 2011.
Yeah. And they were literally importing an illegal stimulant, calling it geranium extract. And they faked the emails. They faked the paperwork. And the FBI had the faked emails and faked paperwork. They actually had an email from the company where they were typing to each other, ha, 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 look what we did. I mean, those are the kind of guys that cause the whole problem for the rest of us, because they give the rest of the industry a bad look. So if we could get rid of those guys that are just doing this, the crap, the rest of us could all put out quality products, because there are people that want to do quality stuff. You know, Optimum Nutrition's 100% whey is a good product if you understand how to use 100% whey product. You know, is it equal to a protein blend? No. But 100% whey used a special whey is good. But that's not the way they market it. They market it as, you know, whey is the best because it's the fastest. Well, no, actually there's faster than whey, but faster isn't better. You can't take, you know, a sports analogy and apply it to protein. You know, but that's because people don't understand the science of it.
I'll go with the Dr. Kramer, because I think he said it 500 million times during my 6 years at UConn. Context, context, context.
You know, and that's what, you know, like we even showed people on a video research paper that showed that whey is so fast that it actually gets cleared out of your system before it can be used. And adding sugar will slow it down. Like, good Lord, people, do you understand what we just told you? That whey is processed faster than sugar? Do you understand that concept? So you still think you're 100% whey. Now, go look at yourself in the mirror. You really think you're getting the gains that you really think you're getting? It's like, no. I mean, it's funny. When you go to the Fit Expos, you can spot the different types of people, you know? And then you hear them, you know, you just listen and they're like, well, yeah, I use Jim's pre-workout, but I just buy my whey at Costco. Uh-huh. And it looks like you do. Sorry.
Walking around the Arnold is one of my all-time favorite things, the expo, because you see the pockets of the industry and the characters who fit within them. It's, again, if you want great people watching, if you've never been to it, in the post-COVID world, if it happens again to the level it did, the Arnold Expo is by far the greatest of the industry, in my opinion.
It is. It is. The Arnold... Except, well, Saturday sucks because it's elbow to elbow and you can't move.
Yeah.
So Friday is good because you can actually move around. Sunday is all right, especially once all the little kids in the strollers leave, which I don't understand why you bring a kid in a stroller or dogs on a leash.
Again, it's an interesting community.
Yeah. Now, what's funny is when I was a professor, I used to try to get kids to go to these things. And I'm like, you don't understand. It's the one event you can go to and walk up to anybody and say, oh my God, your glutes are amazing. Can I have a photo? And they will thank you. You can objectify anybody and they will thank you for it.
Yeah.
So my wife.
Yeah, there's so much that can be said about that going further. Let's.
So my wife came with me the first time I competed at the Arnold in, I think it was 2016. And she just walks around like this, just like, what the hell is going on? It was one of the funniest experiences I've ever had, man. She still talks about to this day just how many amazing people were there.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny is the LA FitEx was actually bigger. It's 90,000 people. But you don't get the extremes of the Arnold.
Yeah.
Because the LA FitEx was just is your typical fitness people. You don't get the extreme stuff.
I've never done the Olympia either. What's that like? Is that like an in-between?
Smaller Arnold. Much smaller Arnold. Hardcore. Hardcore. But, it's Vegas. Except now it's moving because it was sold.
I saw that.
Yeah. So, and I heard rumor it's going to happen the same weekend as The Rocks.
Really?
The Rocks is putting on a new show now.
Yeah. Wow. Athleticon or Athletica or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were, well, now with COVID, I don't know how it's going to end up. Pre-COVID, they were supposedly going to be the same weekend, which I thought was ridiculously dumb.
That's not somebody you want to compete with. That guy wins every time.
I mean, you know, especially the Olympia being the Olympia, you know, it's the crowning jewel of bodybuilding, you know, so.
It used to be.
Yeah, it used to be.
So actually, I'm digging into some of that, right? We're talking people, pockets, craziness. You guys have a standard, right? And you're not, the way you do things, the products, and even the way you push them towards people. Again, there's always a customer face and there's always a marketing aspect, right? If you had to nail down exactly who you target in that audience, who is it? Who's the demographic, whether, you know, describe it as a person, describe it as a group of adjectives, whatever it may be.
Fitness lifestyle people is who our core group is. Some people say, you know, the bodybuilding lifestyle, but I don't really like the bodybuilding term because it kind of omits a lot of people that like to work out, but don't ever have ever think of competing. So I think more of it just as the fitness lifestyle person, you know, the person that needs to go to the gym to alleviate stress. And if they miss the gym for 2 days, they are just wound, or they really miss, and they know that they need to get to the gym. Those are the people that are our people, you know, that we encourage them. Like we hear it all the time that, you know, I'm new here, and we encourage them to, you know, take it on as a lifestyle, because it's more than just working out. You know, it's the nutrition, you know, Jim talks about active rest days. So it's the whole package, you know, and he won't even talk supplements at first. Like right now he's on TikTok doing just training, exercise, tips, videos, zero messaging about supplements on purpose, because he's not there to sell at all. He's there to educate. And that's what that platform is good for us, is to educate people. And it's what he started off doing. If we sell on that platform, we're going to annoy people. So that's not our goal, is to sell products. We want to teach people who he is, teach them how to exercise, give them the tips, bring them into that lifestyle and get them working out. Once they're there, if they're really serious, then they will come and find more. So let them lead it, find it naturally. It's the same as when, you know, the college kid that eventually finds the gym and finds it and they really like it. But now we've got someone that can help give them real advice instead of the idiot in the gym giving everyone the bad advice.
So you just hit on something I was going to ask, but you hit on it in a different way than I was going to come from. I was going to come from, how much thought do you guys, you know, in the back office give to the demographic of the audience for a product, right? You mentioned a joint product. You can target that. You could gear that to an older population. You could gear that to a population that's put a lot of wear and tear in their body through training, right? Two totally ends of the spectrum, one product, it fits both. But one of the things I think you hit on and something to discuss with the current day is you use a platform a certain way. So you just referenced, we're using TikTok to educate. And again, what can be said about TikTok? It is what it is. But the platform utilization for a message, let's get into that a little bit. As a business person, as someone who's, you know, the core business is selling a product to generate revenue. You're using a current technology not to sell, but to educate. And how do you make those decisions? Why is TikTok for you an education platform, whereas for some other people, it might be a sell platform?
So for us, because Jim started off with social media, mm-hmm. So one of the funny story that very, very few people know is, you know, Jim got his start with Muscle and Fitness magazine. So little interesting side bit, he was actually doing his postdoc at Yale University, and he was doing this research study where they were training rats. And so literally he would be down in the basement training the rats. And he was bored while training the rats, so he was writing articles. And he thought, like, you know, why don't I just send a couple of these articles off to Muscle and Fitness magazine to see if they would like them and if they would, you know, be interested in publishing them. Well, they liked him so much, they called him and asked him to come interview for a job. So that's how he ended up being the science editor at Muscle and Fitness, is that he took the initiative to send them some work and they liked what he had to say. So that ended up putting him in the magazine. Well, one day he had this idea at the magazine, is they would always do instructional articles and have two photos. It was called an A and a B, basically a start and an end, you know, photo. And he's like, well, instead of doing these photos, what if we do videos to teach people how to do these exercises? He was like, I can teach them so much more on a video. And the response he got in the meeting was, who would watch a video?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Me being me, I would have sat there and argued with them. Jim, being Jim, just said nothing. Went home and shot a video by himself in his garage. And it's literally it's on YouTube to this day. You can see all the paint cans and all the crap in his garage.
That's awesome.
And he brought it in and they're like, oh, okay, we understand now, but it's not very professional. It's not very good production quality. And he's like, oh my God, guys, I took my camera, put it on a tripod, and I shot a video to show you. But then they were like, well, we kind of like the raw quality of it. You know, it's really authentic because, you know, it's just you and the camera and you're just speaking and it's authentic. So they named it Muscle and Fitness Raw. And that was his whole video series that he created, was Muscle and Fitness Raw, because it was just him in his garage. By the second or third video, he's got drapes up. And by the 10th one or something, I think they had a banner for him. Oh, it's funny. You can watch. I used to show him in class. Yeah. And then I would give students assignments to make videos. You know, how do you exercise on campus? You're a senior, teach freshmen how to exercise on campus. What are their options? How can you exercise at home during a rainy day? All you got is what's at your house. Put together a workout. How can you do it in your house?
Well, nothing better than a bunch of kids in pink short shorts running around Charleston filming exercise videos. It's awesome.
You know, the day the students were like, this is kind of dumb. And I'm like, why can't you guys use the internet to have a whole fitness business?
That's what.
And they're like, how do you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not a computer person. Go figure it out.
So, Tim, one of our future guests in a couple weeks is a former NBA college strength coach who got out of the business. Just the other day, his company took a $24 million Series B for a concierge strength and conditioning app. And he's looking to hire 1,000 coaches. And you heard it here first. I've known Josh for a long time. I believe in him as a person, as a human, and what his business is doing with Rishi, their CEO. They're going to disrupt the coaching environment because they're going to pull so many people out of the college and the private sector. Salary, benefits, remote work, and a dedicated customer base who are committed because they have skin in the game to pay, and the system's been working. So there's some, if you have, like you said, technology and connecting to people, you can do amazing things.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just having an idea. So, I mean, I see a physical therapist now for my back. He does video sessions with clients. I don't know how you do it with physical therapy, but he does it.
Yeah.
So, more, you know, not how about it?
Yeah, there's a level. I mean, there's that the quality thing, cost quality paradigm, whatever you want to call it. But hey, if it's a way to engage and a way to do stuff, it works. Doesn't necessarily mean it's effective, but it generates a buck.
Right. And so going back to our, you know, social media stuff, you know, we really started, you know, Facebook was really the first social media platform out there. So that's where we were, was on Facebook. And then with all the next ones that came around, you know, Snapchat wasn't one that made sense. It just isn't anything that you could use for us. So we never did anything with Snapchat or any of the rest of them, except until Instagram came about. And then now with TikTok, we avoided TikTok for quite a while on purpose, because sadly, it was based on the reputation we heard. That was just a bunch of teenagers doing dances. Well, what actually convinced Jim was his daughters. So Jim's got 2 18-19-year-old daughters now. And they were like, Dad, you have to get on TikTok. Even if you just do some stupid videos of a tattooed guy riding a unicycle, you'll get followers. And he's just like, you know, that's just not, it doesn't fit the brand. He's like, yeah, I can go on TikTok and do a bunch of stupid things and have a bunch of followers, but big deal. What is that going to do for us as a brand to show, you know, that's not my credibility. That's not, he goes, that's not me. So we started looking into TikTok and I was like, you know, Jim, there's more than people on there doing stupid dances. But yeah, there's a lot of that. But based on the algorithm, I don't see all the teenage stupid dance videos. I see 30-year-old stupid dance videos. You know, the algorithm adjusts to your age and your interests. So I see a lot of dog stuff. I see a lot of this stuff. I see a lot of this stuff. So once we started looking at it, okay, let's shoot a couple of videos and put it on there. Well, all we did is go back to his original thing that he did. What made him famous was his training. That's what made him famous at Muscle and Fitness. That's what worked on YouTube. So just go back to what his core thing is. He became really known for his training. So just go back to the original. You have a new audience that's never heard you before, that doesn't know you. So just go back to your original and just do it again. And it works, because here's this guy that knows how to teach an exercise that's dynamic enough that people will watch for 30 seconds, because you got to make them watch for 30 seconds. And they, you know, based on the comments, they like it. If they don't like it, they'll tell you. Some hate it. You'll hear those. But now what we've learned with Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok is they're really broken up into different age demographics. Facebook is your 40 and above. Your Instagram is your 30-year-olds, and there's some crossover. And TikTok is your 20 and below. And there is some crossover with Instagram to TikTok. But there's nobody that's a Facebooker and a TikToker. So it really goes by your age demographic based on where they were in life and what platform came out when they were hot and heavy with it. So it's just interesting that so people of that age group on Facebook want certain kinds of more different this content. On Instagram, they want this kind of content. So like some food stuff does well for us on Instagram. People like recipes of that age group. People that are older don't need recipes from us. So it's just interesting. You have to try a few different things, see what works. Then you get your analytics, study it. It's data. And that's what Jim and I keep talking about with our business guys, our media marketing guys. Data is data. I don't care if it's science data, business data. Look at the data and make your decisions based on what the data looks like. The data doesn't lie. Now you have to be social media. You have to be careful because people can buy likes and people can buy all that kind of stuff. Instagram used to be about pushing. You could really blow up on Instagram by buying everything. Well, as soon as Facebook bought it, that went away. But they don't announce these things. So you have to have someone that is a computer guy going into the analytics and understanding and looking at trends and really understanding what's happening. Like Facebook doesn't tell you things. And they change the algorithm. At first, we could shoot video with a regular camera, video camera, and it worked well. All of a sudden, they changed the algorithm that you had to shoot with an iPhone. Or your reach got limited. The computer did it. Their algorithm did it on to you on purpose. Then they switched it to it had to be a self-facing video or your reach was blunted. But they don't announce these things. Yeah. So if someone's not paying attention to the data, and this is weekly, you're going to have things that are you're going to miss. So it's one of those things where you have to have people that are, you know, cued in and know what to look for and start asking questions why, because the answers aren't just obvious. So, and not everyone has that kind of mind. We've learned that the hard way. We think that everyone thinks this way, and nope, not everyone has an analytical mind. So that's one of the things that we've learned along the way. And I learned, you know, in academia, I'm a sports guy. So I always go back to the sports analogies. Be a role player. What you're really good at, do that. If you're not good at something, don't do it. Let somebody else do it that is good at that role.
That's fair.
And then the whole team succeeds.
Yeah. And for this podcast, that's perfect because we talk all the time about farming out what you suck at, right? So yes. You suck at one part of your business, find the CPA who can do your taxes. Find the freaking marketing guy who can do it. It's just perfect.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer that the leader doesn't have to be the expert at everything. They have to be a good manager.
Yeah.
And a good people person.
A good delegator.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't give me the best technician and make them the leader.
That's going to be a lot of time.
Yeah. I mean, don't screw that kind of stuff up. You know, so it's just too easy to have roles.
Yeah.
You know, and just give advice to each other. But, yeah. You know, if you're an analytical person, well, then let's let them be analytical. Don't make them be creative.
So you've talked about the future of training. We talked about the online. We just talked about the future of kind of social media and how to use it. Where do you see the future of supplements going? Like, with the next 10, 15 years, what's going to change? And then, in your opinion, what should change?
See, now, if I knew that, we'd be formulating those right now.
Yeah. Was there a data? Is there like a trend that you're following right now for the?
Well, right now, the hottest thing is energy drinks. That's what's making a killing right now is energy drinks. I don't know if you know Bang. Mm-hmm. Bang made $1 billion in 2019.
VPX, that guy's a legend in his own way.
He was filing bankruptcy in 2018 and then made $1 billion in 2019 off of Bang. So is Bang okay? I mean, it's an energy drink. That's all it is. But he's got fantastic marketing and great flavors. He nailed the flavors. Now, what else is in it is questionable. You know, it's not going to do anything else for you but a stimulant.
When you're getting sued by Monster Energy, not only a competitor, but another energy drink, I think it was $180 million or something they tried to sue him for and this, that, and the other. And then Rain, the other one that came out that's literally a knockoff of their product. So he came out with another product called Rain, just spelt different. Like, it's...
business. So yeah, that's the big question is what's the future going to look like? You know, and what I just heard yesterday, because, you know, GNC is one of our retailers and they're undergoing new ownership. Mm-hmm. So the big question is what's GNC going to look like? You know, what's the new footprint of GNC going to look like? And nothing has been released yet. You know, they'll have a big corporate meeting and, you know, invite all their distributors and all their, you know, everyone to the big corporate, you know, 4-day event. And they'll make a big, huge splash. They could do the whole thing in about an hour and a half, but they'll spread it out over 4 days. Or they could send out an email. It would be just as effective. So it'll be curious what the new footprint of GNC looks like. But yesterday I heard a rumor that a big part of it is going to be the convenience to go stuff. So RTDs, protein bars, snack foods, you know, what can you stop in and get right now and walk out with right now and use? You know, because can they compete with Amazon? No. Now, here's the problem. I believe they can. And I'm a little frustrated because I've given them two ideas that would blow Amazon out the water. And they have failed to move on either one of the ideas. I mean, one, Amazon, nobody can compete with Amazon. Bodybuilding.com can't compete with Amazon. They're trying, but it's hard. The only thing that GNC can do that none of those other retailers can do is give you a product today. Amazon can get it to you in 2 days, which is fantastic. But if you're out today, GNC can provide that for you because you can swing down by the store and pick it up and walk out with it. So to me, that should be an advertising campaign of theirs. Because they're the only ones that can provide that for you. You know, if you're on vacation and you forgot to pack your supplements, you can walk into a GNC and get them pretty much anywhere you are in the country. Mm-hmm. And yet they don't push that. They don't really talk about that for people. The other thing is if they would get on Instacart, they could have products delivered to people in 1 hour. Now, what can Amazon do? They can't compete with 1 hour. I mean, I'm in LA. 7-Eleven is on Instacart. And I have a friend that drives for him during COVID. He delivered a pack of batteries from 7-Eleven up to the Hollywood Hills and got a $50 tip for a pack of batteries. You know, he's like Sephora got added to Instacart last week. So you can order makeup now on Instacart. Why wouldn't GNC jump on this?
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. You know, so to me, there's some issues corporate-wise where they're just not seeing the future quite yet. Perhaps Pittsburgh isn't quite the Instacart delivery that other metropolitan areas are. I don't know. But convenience. Yeah. That's what people want. It's convenience.
Where do you think it should go? I know you talked about how you guys are trying
quality.
Yep.
Quality. You know, I have a problem with the company have 12 versions of the same product. I mean, how do you, you know, as a customer, how do you know which one to buy? That's confusing as hell. And I know my stuff. And I'll be like, well, do I want this one or should I get this one or what? Well, what would be, I would be so confused. I wouldn't know what the hell to buy. So how about you just put out one solid, good product or, you know, two or three options instead of 12 to cover the shelf, you know? I mean, I have that problem when you go to the pharmacy and you're looking for cold medication. Good Lord, can you help me here? You know, it's like, how many different versions are, you know, I talked to my sister's pharmacist and she says, it's all about owning the shelf space. It's marketing.
So I had a CPG company who I did some stuff with at one point and they had one product. They had four flavors of it, we'll say. Three, but sometimes they had four depending if they could get the ingredients. They had four flavors of the same exact product. They had two packages, so then they had eight products because they had two types of packages, literally the exact same product, the exact same flavors. Size per serving and the messaging were different. So they technically had eight products. But what happened was they were selling all eight products at the same place on the same shelf. So what happens when people are like, well, why do I want this one? What's different? Why is this one more? Why is this one less? Why do you take more of this but less of this? And it became so confusing that they actually got rid of all that and they went back to their original one container, one message, four flavors.
Yeah, to me, keep it simple. You know, if you're talking about the entry-level person, they know nothing about this stuff. So just keep it simple for them. You know, I mean, the worst thing in the world is you want people jumping from product to product to product to product, seeing which, you know, I'll try this pre-workout this month. I'll try this one this next month. For us, that's actually a good thing because as soon as they go try someone else's, they'll tell us, like, I'll never do that again. I'm coming back. Thank you. Best advertising we can have. Go ahead and try another company's product. We don't care. You'll be back. You know, if you are serious about lifting, if it's just about money or if you want a stimulant, nope, you won't use pre-gym. If that's all you want is a stimulant buzz, that's not what pre-gym is. So go buy a stimulant buzz. But if that's what you want, go buy Nodos. It'll be a whole lot cheaper. You know?
I love that for sure. All right. So we kind of figured out where you should go. Obviously, quality should improve. What are some of the other things you would tell like a normal customer who wants to know more about the supplement company?
Educate yourself. Do as much research on the product and the company as you can. You know, because that's the only way you're going to know what the products are, what the ingredients are. You know, if it's all just marketing stuff that everything sounds wonderful, you know, it's just marketing. Nothing's going to be perfect. It can't just be the greatest of the greatest of the greatest of the greatest. So everything should be research-based. And it should be supported by research. So if you have to search for it, or they show you a little asterisk and there's no other definition of what that asterisk means, they're just trying to hide something or they're trying to show something that isn't there. So look for the research that's supporting it. Everything should be documented. There's no reason not to be. The research is there to support these products. If there isn't any research to support the product or the ingredient, I wouldn't trust it. Who knows what it is? So that's, I mean, the more educated you are as a consumer, the better.
So I mean, let's say I started a company, right? I've made my own protein. I've made my own pre-workout, whatever. How would you recommend going about getting it verified by a research scientist or an NSF, et cetera? How does that process work?
With NSF, you just contact them, sign a contract, send it off, and they do the testing. That's, you know, fairly easy. If you wanted to have research done on it, same thing. You just contact, you know, a professor that you'd like to have do it for you. And then it's just a matter of getting a contract sent, you know, written up. You start off with a memorandum of understanding, which is basically a letter of intent kind of a thing where you write out a basic protocol. And most researchers, you can do it one of two ways. Either you submit the protocol to them and they will ask to help edit it or tweak it, or you can ask them to write it up and you can help edit, tweak it. You can go either way with it. very few will sign off on to do a project without them being involved with the design of it some way. But in the past, I've actually been approached by a company when I was at the college to do a study, and everything was good, except they wanted full control of whether I published the data or not. Well, I knew that that wouldn't pass the College of Charleston's research office, because the College of Charleston, like almost every college, has a policy that the data is publishable regardless of the findings. So if the company wants control, what they want to do is hide bad data, which is what pharmaceutical companies do. Yep. So the College of Charleston, like most universities, will not sign off on that in a contract.
Was that the
IRB? I don't have to argue that point. I just let my director of research office argue that point for me, because then I'm not the bad guy.
Yeah.
Now, I have that conversation with Susan ahead of time, fully knowing that this is a stance that the college, and they're like, you're like, well, Tim, do you realize that they have this in there and that we can't sign off? And I'm like, yeah, I know it's in there. And I know you won't sign off on it. But instead of me having this conversation with them and fighting them about it, I figured it's just easier for you guys to have the conversation. And if they're not willing to abide by our policies, well, then you're the one that says, no, I can't accept this. And then now I'm not the bad guy, and we can try and I can work with them again in the future. And she's like, okay, no problem. I have no problem being the bad, you know. You do these kinds of things because that's just the way it works.
It goes but back to what you
said. Doesn't want you to publish data.
Knowing your role.
Right, exactly. But if they want to squash data, to me that means they don't believe in their product. Okay. If their product works, why would you not? Of course it's going to work. You know? I mean, to me that just boggles my mind.
Absolutely.
So, plus, can you imagine how you'd not design a product or a study to not show it works? I mean, I can show vertical, anything that proves vertical jump if I want to. You know, it won't stand up to peer review.
No.
You know, and I won't get it published. Yeah. So you don't see that, study but I can.
Lucky Charms, vertical jump, just like this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I could tell you some things that make your vertical jump go like this based on my college kids over the years that blow your mind. Wasn't always one arm back squat, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. But, you know, it's just one of those things like people are like, oh, you could, of course I could design a study to show anything I want. Like I said, it won't stand up to peer review. So, but then again, wait until you see some of those, you know, some of the journals that some of this stuff gets published in. You find some really obscure journals. And I get some of the, this is an issue for us. Like, for example, right now, if you look in the protein world, the recommended amount of protein is 20 to 30 grams of protein. Well, for who? If you need 3 grams of leucine to turn on mTOR, you don't get 3 grams of leucine until you hit about 30 to 35 grams of protein. So any of that research that showed that 20 grams of protein worked, I want to know who the subjects were and what the training was. Because they were either very novice lifters or their training program was so insufficient that anything would have worked.
You'll so, appreciate
that. We can't complain about the research because the research is published. And it's gospel.
You'll appreciate
we must be wrong.
You'll appreciate this, Tim. When I was going through my RD program recently, one of the girls in the class is talking about protein intake after workouts. And she was like, yeah, and this larger guy tried to tell me he needed more than 30 grams of protein, but the textbook says 30 grams. I was like, just out of curiosity, I was trying to be polite. I swear to God, I was biting my tongue. I go, how much did the guy weigh? She goes, oh, like, I think it was a lineman, so he's probably like real big, like 260, like 280. And I was like, first of all, that's a small lineman. Secondly, that's not nearly enough. And I just, the fact that people think that's the gospel truth for everybody post-workout needs the exact same amount of protein. And there's this magical number. I get it. There's a million studies out there about it, but there's got to be some sort of freaking in-house, like a trial and error to figure out where that number actually is.
It tells you the volume. You know, because I had this argument with a protein researcher, big time protein researcher. And they show that intensity doesn't matter. Agree. It's volume. It's not intensity. Intensity is metabolism. Okay? It's volume of training. Plus, it's years of experience. If you tell me you're using college, you know, average recreational lifters versus people that are in their 30s that have been lifting for 10 years, they're not the same athlete. They don't need the same amounts. They're different people. We now know that elderly people need more protein, up to 70 grams, because we don't utilize it as efficiently. Well, what's elderly? Well, studies are done in 70-year-olds. Well, what about a 55-year-old? Well, I don't know. The study hasn't been done, so they're fine with 30. Sure. What if they've been lifting for 40 years? Oh, there's no one that lifted for 40 years. Really?
Yeah.
There are now.
Yeah.
You know?
So I got two things, right? First, in this exact example, so my father, right, he's 65 now. He's college football, big dude, you know, the whole bit. He's benched 315 for over 40 years. The first time he did it, he was 19. He can still do it. So you can't tell me a guy who's put that training exposure with that training density, with that consistency, is the same as a normal person his age. But the thing is, when you look at him compared to a person who's normal, I mean, he's 6'4", 250, and he looks a certain way because he can still bench 315 for over 40 years. So there's, again, people don't get it because to all of your points, they try and put people in a little box of, well, this is normal. And within that, there was a math thing we hit. I want to reference, I had one of the, I think he was a Nobel laureate kind of guy in my MBA program at Hofstra. He was an emeritus professor who taught one class. And it was statistics for business. And it was my favorite class I've ever taken. And again, I've had some tremendous professors. He started the class with first day, first class. He goes, the only thing you need to know about statistics is if someone puts a percentage, don't listen to them. Because I can make anything say anything I want as a percentage. He goes, what you need to know is not what the numbers say, but what the method is to get the number. He's like, because I could tell you 15 methods to get you the number you want. It's taking the data and making it say what you want is easy. Understanding why it did that, that's the art. And that was the one thing I took all those, you know, connected dots for me from Kramer, from Dr. Armstrong, from Dr. Volek, in the research-based world I lived in, to the business world, to the data, to synthesize and everything was, oh, that's right. The numbers actually don't mean anything. It's how they got the number and why they use that method. But again, that's an analytical thing that people don't take the time to understand.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you deal with that all the time. I mean, if you go from one to two, you got 100% increase.
Well, right. I always say 2 + 2 = 4, and so is the square root of 16.
Yeah.
But they're not the same thing at all.
Well, I mean, I'd explain to my students. So the kid went from 185 to 200. Is that the same as a guy going from 500 to 515? Well, yeah. No, it's not. Are you kidding me? Do you know how long it takes to go from 500 to 515? I mean, that jump is huge.
Yeah.
But you're telling me it's the same?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have a concept of what you're talking about, you know. You can't just look at the data and not have a realistic view of what you're, you know. Oh, you know, it decreased 47%. Well,
not only, I'll go with your lifting example, not only 500 to 515, well, were they 130 pounds? Were they 525 pounds?
Right.
Because, you know, who, again, I go to Kramer, context.
Yep. Absolutely.
Tim, you've absolutely crushed every question we've thrown at you. We got three that we throw at everybody at the very end here. So I'm going to start with the first one. And that's when you're not busy with your dogs and you're not busy putting together awesome signs for Jim Stepani, what did you do to keep your kind of time, life, work balance going on?
Pre-COVID or post-COVID? Mid-COVID.
Let's go pre and then post. We'll do a little research study here.
Pre, my biggest thing is finding art stuff around LA. So either like art festivals or art, something to go check out. Because honestly, I don't have a lot of free time working with Jim. You know, it's can be 6 or 7 days a week at times. So even let's say it is, I know I'm going to, let's say we're going to do something on Saturday or Sunday. I can sneak off for 2-3 hours, go do something, you know, whether it's a, we have a place called the Huntington Library and Gardens. Well, the gardens are, I think there's 7 gardens at this place, and each one of them could take you 2 hours to walk through. Yeah, the Japanese garden has been in numerous Hollywood video or movies. Like, I think it was in Kill Bill is where they filmed the Japanese scene. But the place is enormous, enormous. So anything to go check out, see something, look at something. But there's so much art here in LA, so many art galleries, museums, or street art. Food always goes with it, you know, because there's taco trucks or food trucks or, you know, some event somewhere. So, and if you're in, you know, if I'm down in some part of town that I'm not normally, take advantage of being down in that area and, you know, grab it if it's after 4 o'clock, you know, because you can't eat before 4. Intermittent fasting. What else is a big one? I don't really do a whole, you know, I'm a sports fan. So if it's basketball season, watching UConn men and UConn women is a challenge to watch every game, you know, to get that many games in, plus, you know, other games that you just happen to want to see is a challenge. And then if the NFL is going on and college football at the same time, that can be bad.
Go Raiders, right?
I'm a Raiders fan, so thankfully for the last how many years I haven't had to watch a lot of games.
New England Patriots, everybody. New England Patriots.
They got good when I left.
I'm from Boston.
Yeah. But see, I'm also a North Dakota State guy. And so, you know, they've won 8 titles in the last 9 years. Mm-hmm. So I can watch them on TV. And so, you know, like I've known, like Carson Wentz, I've known about him since he was a sophomore in college because he was actually my nephew's summer football coach. Because I remember asking my nephew when he came home one day, I was like, so who's your coach? He's like, number 11. He's really cool. He's a really nice guy. So I literally looked him up in, you know, the roster. And I was like, oh, he's sophomore quarterback, Carson Wentz. Interesting. You know how many schools recruited him out of high school? 1. He got 1 offer. And it's because he blew his knee out his senior year, like in the 2nd game. So he got 1 offer based on his athletic ability.
Damn.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Didn't know that. Hey, that's a whole – there's a commentary on talent identification in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, same thing. Josh Allen with the Bills, they had the same coach because Carson's coach left and went to Wyoming. Both his offensive coordinator and his head coach. And Josh Allen played for 2 years at Wyoming under those guys. So same thing. Allen only had 1 offer, and that was to Wyoming. So those guys have some kind of ability to see potential talent out of an athlete.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, they're unknown coaches. So it's amazing what they can, you know, go pick. But so yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, you know. The dogs take a lot of time, you know, because I'll go walk.
What kind of dogs?
What's that?
What kind of dogs?
Siberian Huskies.
Nice. Heterochromic, 2 different color eyes?
No, uh-uh, both blue.
Nah, my daughter's, my wife's a Husky. She's a high jumper. I was a track guy. Our daughter has 2 different color eyes, so we joke she's a Husky.
Yeah. One of them's named UConn.
Nice.
So. Now, post-COVID, I do less because there's nothing open, you know. Yeah. Except now, the big thing is just take them for walks, find them someplace to go walk. But LA is still kind of shut down, so not a whole heck of a lot to do.
Switching gears on you, go at any point in your career and no matter what you were doing, what's the best thing you've ever spent $500 or less on? Just open like that.
$500 or less on?
Mm-hmm. That had the most impact, that got you the best result, whatever it may be, whichever direction you go, that just low cost, something someone could get tomorrow.
Anything like supplement wise or
anything? I'm just throwing it out there. What's
Oh, the then I'd have to go with a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
The physical therapist told me to buy a certain pair of shoes. And I put them on in the store to try them. And I felt immediate improvement in my back. I was shocked. I thought he was full of crap. How much he was hyping them up. And I felt instant. I bet you I've gone 9 pair now since that in the last 2 years. So New Balance 1080s. You got back issues, New Balance 1080s.
You heard it here first, folks. Let's go. New Balance 1080s.
Yeah. I'm in the market for a new pair of shoes soon. So yeah.
You'll like this guy, Ben. He his name is Garrett Chen, but he's from Northeastern University. And he interned with the Patriots and the Sox.
Wow. He's got some credentialing behind him. Got a little name to him for sure.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
All right. Last question for you, Tim. So a lot of our people are about self-growth and making sure they're improving daily. Do you have a coach or a couple of people, mentors, people you go to with ideas and want to hear more from?
Not really. I mean, Jim and I, see each other probably 5 days a week, at least. We just have running conversations about different things. But someone I still look up, I take a lot from is actually Gino. From UConn, just his, a lot of his leadership stuff, a lot of his philosophies, some of the stuff that he puts on the locker room walls, some of those messages, because I'll talk to them, some of that messaging, I'll talk to my nieces and nephews, or, I've had put them on water bottles, for them, and then had Jim sign it or something and send it off to them, because, they're in sports now. And so just that kind of messaging about, doing things the right way, that winning isn't the important part. Doing things the right way, playing hard, being a good teammate, those concepts about taking care of the little things, and the rest takes care of itself. Stuff that Kramer talked about, live outside your comfort zone, work outside your comfort zone. Maris would talk about you have an obligation. Now that you've gained this knowledge, you have an obligation to share it with others, because if you just keep it to yourself, what good is that? It doesn't do anybody any good. You have all this knowledge. What are you going to do with it? So he talked about, sharing it with others, so that's why I got a PhD, is I wanted to be a faculty member. I wanted to teach and do research and discover new things. And I liked working with students, especially in the lab. It was fun. So, I believe that's where really the most learning comes, because you can come up with things that you just don't have any clue about. Volek and I remember sitting in his office at Ball State, and I remember asking him if he had ever seen a decrease in testosterone after feeding subjects a meal. And he just sat back and looked at me, and he's like, yeah, twice. And he pulled up two different data sets from two different studies, and he had this negative blip in testosterone that Jim and I got in our dissertation study. All of us had ignored it because we just thought it was a weird blip. Now that we have 3 studies from 2 different labs, there's something real going on here. So we designed a study within a little study, and we actually showed that this blip in testosterone was actually an increase in testosterone uptake following a meal, which makes sense that you eat, it would stimulate testosterone uptake. I mean, that kind of stuff, it doesn't happen in the classroom because you're only learning what someone else is teaching you out of a book. So in the lab, when you have those kinds of things and you can have those free discussions where you're not afraid to say, what do you think? Or what do you know? I get this weird data. I can't figure it out. How many people are afraid to say, I don't know? I was told prior to my master's thesis defense, don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Just don't say it too many times.
No, that's awesome. And you're absolutely right. Hands-on learning is so much more important and gets overlooked in so many master's and undergraduate programs for sure.
Yeah. And while I talked to my students, you know, in that resistance training class where, you know, you taught for me a couple times, like I told the students, I stole this from this guy. I stole this from this guy. I took this from this guy. There's nothing wrong with taking stuff from other people. Just give them credit for it. You know, don't make yourself sound like you're the genius that thought of everything, because now you're just, you know, it'll come out eventually that it wasn't you. So just be honest. Hey, I worked with so-and-so and I took this idea from him. It was really good. I saw this and I tweaked a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. You learn from other people. Of course you take some of their stuff.
One of the things I used to tell my students at Hofstra when I adjunct, so I was the head strength coach and also adjuncted. And first thing was, look, you will never do anything someone hasn't already done. You just may not know about it yet. I was like, the last original thought in terms of exercise selection, programming, strength and conditioning happened sometime in like the 60s. So, you know, it's just a rehash. That's okay. Adjust it to your context. And again, I'll go back to the Kramer. Context, context, context.
Yeah, like the day I saw Hootie, you know, they did a video of her training the Kansas basketball team. And she was having them do a jump up to a pull-up. You know, for a plyo type, you know, pull-up, explosive pull-up. I'm like, that's brilliant. You know, I mean, how else are you going to do an explosive pull-up maneuver with guys that are 6'10"? You know? And it's just seeing her do it, and I was like, of course she thought of it, you know, doing something like that. And it was just, you know, what do you have? What tools do you got? And run with it.
Yeah, and so when I worked for Hootie for a couple of years, and one of the things I know, because I know where she came up with it, was looking at guys on the playground dunking, right? And how trying, and she was trying to find that balance of mimicking the reactive component of, you know, a reactive jump versus a timed, you know, ballistic explosive jump with some type of coordinative task. And it was all about guys under the post being able to quick double jump and dunk. And she had those bars installed in the weight room for storage originally to put med balls and stuff on. And all of a sudden it became not only jump to the bars, but now jump up and grab a med ball, because the same thing, it's a grip task, it's a reactive drop. So she started to just add these layers in because, again, she had knowledge, she had tools and resources at her disposal, and she just started layering things. And all of a sudden now people are like, whoa. But she was connecting dots from all these other things to do it.
Yeah, which, you know, and that's what I mean. Like, when I was at the College of Charleston, one of the professors would teach her students to be lifelong learners. You know, and I think Kramer called it, you know, use a different phrase, but it's just something that stuck in my head. Jim would talk about what we talked 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We don't teach that anymore. And if you're not continually learning, you're going to be wrong or outdated. So it's not hard to keep up. You just keep on going and keep questioning. It's not, you know, it's just because this is what you like to do. That's it. People are like, well, how do you know all this? I was like, I like it. It's not hard. It's not. No, I don't read books. I read research journals. You know, I read research articles. I'd rather read that than some book that someone wrote. I don't care what they thought. Or what some story they came up with. If I want leisure, I want to turn my brain off. You know, if I use it all day, the last thing I want to do is think more. You know, entertain.
One of my favorite things you told me when we were both at Charleston, you told me Coach Martin asked you to come in once a month. I forget who the other PhD or postdoc was. And he asked you to come in every month and give him like a updated, like, hey, this past month in research, which obviously we both know is not how research works. But just that he was trying to stay at that, you know, that cutting edge and stay above everyone else, which is so rare in D1, especially football, it was pretty cool to hear that.
He was a little intense.
He was.
He was a little intense. Did he ever relax?
I never saw it. Joe, you had him for 6 years. I only had him for two. Did he ever relax?
No. God, no.
That guy, he was, geez, he was wired. Yeah.
Some people just have it, you know?
Yeah, I did, you know? He was intense. Nicest guy, but yeah, I never saw him training anyone, you know, our team. You know, I always saw him out of the weight room. Yeah. So.
Imagine what he was like with all the guys in there and yelling and screaming and no music ever. No music. Never.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, a little different than that basketball coach at the college?
Just a touch. Just a touch. I'm going to leave that one alone. Just a touch. Oh, man. Tim, I appreciate you coming on, man. You crushed everything. You gave me a lot to think about and a lot to learn, even myself. So I know whoever's listening is definitely going to learn a lot, too. We really appreciate it, man. You crushed it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Nice to meet you, by the way.
All right, Tim. With that, we're going to sign off, man. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good night.
You too.
Yeah, you too. Yeah.